Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host, Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It's the Albany legislature here that's at fault, not the unions.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
There's some things we have to have taxes for, and that's fine, but you just have to stand up and say some of these things we can't afford.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Bill Rock, you've got it right one more time. It's Friday, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here in Studio 4. Mr. Mayor, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. You know what I heard this morning?
No,
what did
you hear?
I heard possible snow showers on Sunday.
Yep, Saturday night, Sunday morning. Yep.
First time this season that I've heard that. Maybe that's been forecast before.
I was reading as well this morning that there is a shortage of de-icer for the airports and for roadways because there was a strike in Canada this summer.
I did not read that, but I can tell you that we have lots of salt and lots of plows and a great train sanitation department raring to go. All kidding aside, the good news is the last few winters have been very mild, and you know that saves money, which is nice, but it also doesn't rip up the roads. It's the plows that a lot of things rip up roads, but plows are the worst.
And the water that gets underneath and freezes
and
breaks it up.
So it's been good for the roads as well as our budget.
All right, let's get into it. We have an abbreviated program today because you've got an appointment.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Understood. Let's get to the MTA plan. You've talked about it, but you've been sort of quiet about it. Are you in favor of this?
First, I can't not start talking about the MTA without talking about a guy named Edwin Thomas. Edwin Thomas was a bus driver that some idiot had an argument with and paying and killed the guy.
Awful. The guy has a rap sheet. He's out on the streets.
Whole other issue. Listen, that's another issue. But I talked to this guy, Edwin Thomas's son, and what do you say? Anyways, I'm sorry. This is a guy, just works, goes to work every day, sets the alarm clock, punches the time clock, and didn't come home this day.
No, bad deal. Okay,
anyways,
MTA deal.
People want services. Somebody's got to pay. For a long time, the MTA has been living where their expenses were greater than their real revenues, but the way they were able to pay the bills is they get a cut of the real estate transaction taxes. When you sell a piece of property, retail or commercial or residential, the city and the state and the MTA get a piece. And if you go back a few years, remember the papers said all of a sudden, oh, these idiots running the MTA didn't know where the money, how much money they have. All of a sudden they have this windfall. Well, the windfall was a surprise to them. It was a surprise to the state. It was a surprise to the city. It had to do with a whole bunch of commercial buildings all of a sudden being sold. If you remember, Zell sold them to Schwarzman, who resold them, and every time we got a great increase in our taxes, and the MTA benefited from that. Now, no surprise, because of the economy and the availability of mortgage money, there's no revenues coming in, or a lot less revenues coming in through the real estate transaction tax, and their expenses normally go up, and everybody wants to have more security and more this and more that. And if you remember, I did come up with a plan. Or
called congestion something.
Whatever it was called. And it was supported, the poll showed, by two-thirds of the people in all five boroughs by the end. It took a while to explain it, but it did. It was supported by every environmental and transportation advocacy group, bar none. I think it was supported by every single newspaper editorial board in the city. And the state legislature said no. We don't think it's right. We have better ideas. But what that plan would have done, it would have gotten us $384 million of federal money, a gift, which is gone now. I got lots of joking calls from mayors around the country saying, thanks, we appreciate it, because they got the money. And it would have given us money for a capital budget. The only ways the MTA is ever going to reduce their expenses or get control over them is if they make investments in labor-saving technology and things like that. Without a capital budget, you can't do it. And as Dick Ravitch said yesterday, and incidentally, Governor deserves a lot of credit for appointing Ravitch and coming up with the idea of a study commission. And, some people say, oh, it's just cover, but it isn't. Ravitch is a smart guy. He used to run the MTA, knows what he's doing. You don't have to agree with him on everything, but what he did is thoughtful. And he's got some real concrete ideas. And he pointed out that there is literally not $1 available for the capital budget for the next 5 years. The plan that we had would have given us $500 million, $600 million, whatever it was, per year for capital, and that would have let us get ahead and would have let us increase services to parts of the city where the MTA doesn't serve, would have let us make the buses work much faster because of dedicated lanes and technology that changes traffic lights when they get near them. Would have done a lot of things, would have helped everybody. But the legislature, which is their right, they said, no, we have a better idea. And so what I said yesterday was, well, great, you have our ideas, and you now have Ravitch's ideas, and I'll be happy to help everybody and support. What do you want to do? They were the ones that, you know, it's in the end, it is their responsibility. There is an allegation that we could toll bridges without getting state approval. Every reputable lawyer says that's not true. There's all sorts of legal issues. Each of these bridges was built under a different legal structure. We took federal monies, which require us to not do or do certain things on those bridges years and years ago. And if we could have done this without state legislative approval, we would have had that congestion pricing going right now, and we would have had that budget. But the truth of the matter is, you can wish it away, but you can't get away from it. And so now it's up to the legislature. And I think they understand. You know, I had a conversation with Shelley Silver. He understands. We may not be in agreement on everything, but Shelley does understand we have to do something for mass transit. And if they don't, the fares are going to go up to 23%, and they're going to cut out some service.
Having said what you just did, is this plan a fait accompli? Is it?
The Ravitch Commission has no legal status whatsoever. He's presented a number of ideas. Some have to do with governance. I would like to do some other things with governance as well, but I think that's a distraction at the moment. He presented two ways to raise funds. One was tolling all the bridges. Another was what he calls a mobility tax. Other people might call a payroll tax. Other people, and it's... those are two ideas.
That employers pay.
Yeah, but in the end, everybody pays.
And it affects the employee.
Yeah, sure. I mean, anybody that thinks that it doesn't just doesn't understand the real world. All money is fungible, and so that is true. But it does share the pain. I think that has the benefit of that. But most importantly, it is a concrete idea that if enacted, whether you like it or not, it would work. If you don't like it, that's fine. Some parts of it that I might not like. But at least Dick Ravitch has come up with some ideas. The city came up with some ideas. And it's up to the state legislature to take whatever input they need, they're willing to listen to, and come up with a concrete plan, which in the end they have to pass and the governor has to sign.
All right. If indeed there are tolls on the Harlem River bridges and the East River bridges, I'm assuming that you can't build toll plazas. It would be done electronically?
No. In this day and age, maybe the dumbest design decisions ever made in the history of the world, because we all get stuck in those lines, is to put the toll booths right at the constricted point as you're entering or exiting a bridge. What you should do is, in this day and age, you would sell a pass. It could be a one-time pass or a 10-time pass. You could pay with a credit card or pay with cash if you don't want your name on something. But you do that miles away at stores or in parking lots or something. And so when you come, you just put it in your windshield and, you know, you go zipping through at 35 miles an hour. And if you want to see that, go Route 95. There's a toll booth there. We don't even have to slow down. 35 miles an hour, you go right through.
All right. Earlier this week when we were discussing this, when it first broke in the papers, I had a telephone caller from, I believe it was Brooklyn. It was Kevin from Brooklyn, runs a small trucking company.
Yep.
He said, this is going to kill me. He said, the extra tolls, if indeed the bridge tolls go in, he goes, this is going to absolutely put me out of business.
I mean, you know, it's up to the legislature to figure out what they want to do. I can remember back in the days when the city was promoting its idea, as you call congestion pricing. I hate to even use the words these days because I don't want to start a war. I was trying to get something done here. We did address that issue. We addressed the issue of people finding places to park if they move to mass transit, how you got the mass transit going before you put the tolls on. That was the federal money was going to let us do that. What you do about small businesses. I mean, this guy's got a legitimate concern. And you have to do that. Having said that, at the same time you have to do that, we have to do something. So there's no easy choices. And remember, this is just a small thing. You wait until the state tries to balance its budget. And the city balances its budget. This is a sideshow.
Well, to that point, that's one of my worries and the worries of others, is that we are, in a sense, rewarding the fiscal irresponsibility of those that make the decisions about budgets by just sending them more money when they still have so much more to do here.
Well, in New York City, I can tell you how we're addressing our budgets. We cut 2.5% more out of. We've had 4 or 5 cuts already over the last few years.
I was thinking of others.
I can talk about is New York City. We have a 2.5% cut and a 5% cut coming in, and I've already said that may not be enough. I am not in favor of raising taxes because it's a disincentive, and particularly in bad times. Having said that, anybody that thinks that you can cut your way totally out of big budget problems when the economy really slows down without hurting the city or the state or the country or whatever is just unrealistic. The federal government can print money. They're in a whole different world. The state can play a lot of games and postpone a lot of things, but eventually they do have to balance their budget. And I think the governor has been really standing up and taking the lead on this and saying, guys, the day, as Hugh Carey once said, the days of wine and roses are over. The governor next week, I think the week after next, on the 16th, is coming out with his proposal for a budget early. The legislature comes back after the first of the year, and then they have to address the issue. They don't have to adopt everything the governor asks for, but they're going to have to pass a budget. They have to pass their budget by the end of March. New York City's budget isn't due until the end of June. And I can tell you, the city council, led by Chris Quinn and the mayor, and Bill Thompson will be part of it, the controller, we will, no matter what the politics are, we'll all come together and we will pass a responsible budget before the deadline. But until we know what the state's going to do, I can't tell you exactly what that's going to look like. Having said that, if you think it's going to be painless, it's not. It is going to, we can talk about some of the, I don't like to necessarily call them cuts, but reductions.
Like FDNY.
FDNY, I'll come back in a second. But we have to do these things, and there will be enhanced revenue as part of that. Enhanced revenue is a euphemism for taxes or fees. It's only two ways you get money.
Where do you think that the MTA plan as presented falls into the larger budget process? I'm thinking from a timing issue.
The MTA has a legal requirement, the board, to come up with a balanced budget by the end of December. I'm not sure how you what the requirement is legally in terms of they can say, well, you know, God will provide and fill in a number, or they can come up with, they in all fairness have said exactly what the worst case is. They'll raise fares 23%. So, you know, they could put that in their budget and satisfy the legal requirements. In all fairness to them, until the state legislature acts, they can't do very much else. You know, are you rewarding them for bad performance? Part of these things are beyond their control. Part of these things, people want more service. Part of these things were done by their predecessors over years. The state and the city and everybody that's part of this has always been unwilling to raise fares when they were needed because it's so politically charged, and so they've always operated without enough. That's one side of the coin, and Ravitch addressed that in his report. The other side of the coin is, I've been saying this for a long time, I don't think they are as well run as they could be by a lot. And in fact, back in 2001, to show you how naive I was, one of my campaign promises was if I got elected, I'd try to take over the MTA because it's mostly city, or it's people coming into the city from others. Other people should have some say in it because it's a regional thing, but this primarily it is a city function, and the city should be in charge or at least have a lot more control over its destiny. Then along came 9/11, the economics of everything changed, including the city, and I was a little bit naive to think that the state legislature would ever turn anything over to the city. Now, maybe hopefully my naivete is not, and we come back and talk about the fires.
Yeah, all right, let me take a really fast break right here. We're coming back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg at News Talk Radio 710 WOR, 2 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here on a Friday John Gambling Show, 25 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let's talk about FDNY.
Just before, because I've got to go early, okay. As you know, yeah. And unfortunately, two things. One, there's been a lot of press about the Giants in football. Have you read any of this?
I read a headline.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I just want to say one thing. You know, the Giants are doing something great, and I just want to give them some credit for that. There is a coat drive, New York Cares coat drive for people that don't have coats for the winter. You can drop off coats at Giants Stadium Sunday, and also there's a place to do it at Grand Central, Penn Station, Port Authority, and at City Hall. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, I know you're going to care about this, but our Landmarks Commission has a new book. Here's what it looks like, New York City Landmarks. It is actually a fascinating book, and it talks about all the things they've done. And you can get this book, call 311, and they'll tell you how.
All right, very good. FDNY, some firehouses, overnights, part of the cutbacks.
We have to find ways to do more with less. That's why efficiencies, it is a reduction, but if you cut back, you lose services. If you do things more efficiently, you reduce your costs but don't necessarily lose services, or you don't lose them for the whole time. You might have different hours and different days and that sort of thing. Every agency has got to do something. Police department's going to make do with 1,000 fewer police officers. I hope it doesn't have to get more than that. We'll see what happens to our tax revenues. The fire department, we look to see where you can do less. Fire department, you have a say. By contract, we have to have X number of people per firehouse, per engine, per ladder. And so the only way is you're going to have fewer people and save money. And remember, all of these agencies, their expenses, almost all of it is labor. And in the case of firehouses, we're closing a firehouse on Governor's Island. They've had 10 calls in 22 months. There's nobody that lives there. So when anybody is there, we will have an ambulance with the trained EMTs there. And if there's a fire in a building, the buildings are far apart. You damage it so much you probably couldn't rebuild it anyways.
You got to take your risks and figure out.
Right, and it just, we can't afford everything, so doing that. And then there are four or five firehouses where they're in places you don't have a lot of activity on weekends or at nights, and we don't need both an engine and a ladder. So in most of them, we're keeping the engine. In one case, we're keeping the ladder, but the fire department believes that they'll still be able to keep people safe. Is it as safe as if you had a firehouse on every block? No, it is not. But the reality is public has to make decisions. How much do you want to spend on one thing versus another? And you're going to see lots of efficiencies throughout this city. We're going to have a lot more because we just don't have the revenue and nobody wants to pay more taxes.
All right, the other headline story, you already referenced it, the Plaxico Burris story, the illegal gun in the nightclub. Some people have said that you overreacted on this, not this person here, I can assure you, but when you've also put it next to the shooting death of that 14-year-old, you have to say to yourself, come on.
We're not overreacting. We are killing our kids, killing our police officers, killing you and me. There are too many guns in the streets. This state legislature deserves a lot of credit, and Pataki, I think, was the one that signed the bill. We have the toughest gun laws in the country. You carry a loaded gun, you go to the slammer for 3.5 years, and the law should apply. I'm not picking on Plaxico. I don't know if I've even met the guy who made a great catch. Thank you very much. We love it. Hope the Giants will win my dream is a Giants Jets Super Bowl, in which case I'd root for New York. But, the bottom line is the law should apply to everyone. And to take a gun into it's even worse, take a gun into a crowded nightclub where people drink and push each other around because of just the density of people there, there's a penalty. There's a reason for this law. And it is to convince you to not do this and to make the price heavy to stop it. And there's nothing to do with him. And people would say, oh, he's this, he's that. I don't not picking on him. The law should be the law. And then incidentally, the law wasn't followed in the hospital or when people should have called the police department earlier. And they'll let the investigative process, up to the DA what to do, not to me. But is it a good law? You betcha it is. We've got to get guns off the streets. People that are talking about there are other things. It's our kids. As you referenced, let the sports writers who don't like this go interview the parents of the 14-year-old kid.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. You are a man that likes information. That's how you do your decision making. You had a survey, a consumer survey of the people of New York City. The numbers were somewhere in the middle, probably.
Yeah, I guess. Some things.
You learn? What was the most interesting
that you always know is that perception is different than reality. Sometimes better, sometimes worse. For example, the sanitation department rates streets for cleanliness. There's a whole system. You drive down the street, you count the number of pieces of paper and you get a score and all that sort of stuff. Public's perception of whether that street is clean or dirty may be inconsistent, maybe better, maybe worse. Wherever there's a difference between perception and what our internal studies show is cause to investigate further. Does not mean that our internal studies were wrong. Doesn't mean the public's perception is wrong. It's just another data point to say when there's a difference, do some more work. And you will never please some people, but it's fascinating. The more you know about a service, you tend in the city to think it's better. So 85% of the parents of public school kids think the school system's doing a good job, but 75% of the overall population. So if you have this perception of the David Letterman getting mugged in Central Park, which doesn't happen very often, it's a very safe place, or of, back to the terrible old days, which we're not going back to even in this budget crisis, you have to take a look, and it's just another data point. Doesn't mean the public's wrong, doesn't mean the department that said something different is wrong, it just tells you where to look, and then you see.
Three schools are going to be closed because of unacceptable...
Yes. One of the newspapers wrote it as though it was, they wrote the story right next to the fire department as though it had something to do with the budget. It has nothing to do with the budget.
No, it was performance.
Performance. And incidentally, performance. In every one of those places, we open a new school the next day.
My question was exactly that. What happens to the kids?
We open a new school. The kids may go stay in that building or go to a different building, but we're not closing we're not reducing the number of schools. If the schools don't perform, the principal shouldn't be there and anybody else that didn't carry their weight. Maybe it was beyond the principal's control, and we keep them, maybe not. That's up to the Department of Ed. But if you have high incidence of disruptive behavior, if you have no improvement in the kids' education as measured by legitimate tests, because that's the only fair ways to do it. You don't want a subjective thing. If they aren't complying with all of the rules and regulations, the federal government, the state government, the city government, courts impose on us, then you close the school and we give parents notice as much as we can. I think actually we close something, I think it's more like 20 than three schools, and there will be 20 or there, whatever it is, reopened with a new theme, new management, new whatever, to make them work. And incidentally, it'll probably cost us more than if we didn't close the first ones. This is not a budgetary thing. This is a quality of education thing, and we should be doing this.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note because I know you have an appointment that you got to get to.
Have a great week. See you next weekend.
Next Friday, we will get together once again.
And for the whole hour.
Right here. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate that. We continue here on the John Gambling Show. 8:32 is our time. Time for Joe Bartlett.